And welcome to our audiocast for Monday, January 21st, 2008 from AvWeb, the Internet's general aviation news service and magazine. Brought to you today by Aviation Consumer Magazine. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting. And we're speaking today with Ed Scott, U.S. Parachute Association's Executive Director, America's premier organization dedicated to the promotion of safe skydiving nationwide. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Mike.
Appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Glad to, sure.
Now, to kind of get us started, you guys would be like kind of the AOPA to pilots, right?
Somewhat, yes. We've got just over 31,000 members. Most of them are active skydivers. Besides memberships, we also, and for decades, have offered skydiving licenses and skydive instructor ratings as well. And that's kind of the bread and butter of what we do.
Now, educate me just a little bit. I've been a pilot for a long time, and I've seen and been around, you know, some skydiving operations. I've never really looked into it. That's not regulated by the feds like pilots are, right?
Not to the same extent, no.
We do
have a section of the FARs that apply directly to parachute operations. It's Part 105. And it does impose some requirements on us, but nothing too onerous. Basically requires that we notify air traffic control of the locations and times when we're jumping. Our jump pilots have to be in radio communication with air traffic control prior to each and every drop. And then the FAA imposes some equipment requirements on us as well, specifically the need to have a reserve parachute, a backup parachute that's always packed by an FAA-certified rigger.
Those people do have to be certified and so forth.
The riggers are, yes.
What about the instructors? Do they have any certification other than through you guys?
They are certified by us. Every instructor first has shown that he's reached the experience level and the number of jumps that we ask for him to qualify, and has earned our D license, and then goes through a training course where he's shown and then demonstrates back to us that they've learned the fundamentals of instruction and then the specific things that need to be taught to a beginning skydiver.
Well, you guys have kind of filled the gap then where the feds leave off. You sort of stepped in to promote safety. And the reason we're talking to you today is you guys have set a 45-year safety record. Is that correct?
We sure have, and we're very proud of that. We had a total of 18 skydiver fatalities last year in the U.S., and, of course, each and every one is tragic, and we always try to get that number down, but that is the lowest number of fatalities we've had since 1962 when we had just 14. The huge difference here is that skydiving is so much more expansive now than it was back in the early 1960s. Many more skydivers and much more parachute jumping going on these days. So to reach back that far and achieve a record from the 1960s is just huge for us.
Now, has this been a consistent trend down through the years?
It is a trend that we see and we like seeing. Back in the late 1970s, and again, not nearly as many skydivers or nearly as many jumps were being made, but we actually had on the average of 50 to 60 fatalities in a few of those given years. And thankfully, through technology applied to our equipment and the training methods that we've employed and the education that we constantly do, we've seen the average number of fatalities actually decrease substantially. The past 5 years, it's been around 21. The 5 years before that, we were averaging about 34 per year, and the 5 years before that, we were up to 45 or so. So thankfully, many things have been bringing those totals down over the past several years.
Can you set like a benchmark that was a turning point? When did the newer technology really kick in?
Well, one thing that has definitely helped us is the rise in the use of what we call an automatic activation device. These devices have been around since, certainly the early 1970s, but back then they were mechanical in nature. Now they're a mini microprocessor. What this AED does and what it is a device that's actually packed in the reserve parachute container by the rigger when he does a reserve repack, And this device is actually installed such that when it senses that the speed below a certain altitude is higher than it should be for a person under an open canopy, it actually initiates the deployment of that reserve parachute. So in essence, at a certain altitude, if a skydiver is either unconscious or for some reason just loses altitude awareness and hasn't deployed their main parachute, this AAD will deploy the reserve for the skydiver, and that way he'll end up under a good canopy in good time. And the main difference is that it's become a very accepted feature now. Many, many skydivers are now installing and using these AADs. And, of course, I say using. Most skydivers never use it, never have to, but it's there now. And we've seen in many cases where the AAD has deployed the reserve, where in the past, had it not been there, we probably would have had another number to add to our fatality count.
Right. Well, you know what us pilots say? We don't know why anybody would jump out of a perfectly good airplane, but those folks sure look like they're having a good time.
We do. I'm both a pilot and a skydiver, and I enjoy doing each, but there's certainly nothing like the thrill of just a good skydive with good friends and enjoying the thrill and the air and getting back down and packing up and doing it all over again.
Sure, you might be familiar with our boss, Paul Bertarelli.
Oh, sure. I've made some jumps with Paul.
I've seen some pictures, and sure looks like they're having a good time. What
well,
do you think?
Everybody ought to try it.
Yeah, I may one of these days. I think I want to wait until I get my kids out of college, and I don't know. That probably didn't make sense to you, but maybe I could do one of those tandem jump things.
That might be the way to start. That's certainly a good way to make sure you've got an experienced instructor with you the whole time. And we certainly encourage that, but really the way to experience the thrill is to go beyond that. Only takes a few more jumps where you're actually deploying the chute yourself and steering yourself to the ground, and that just brings such fulfillment.
Now, I'm just curious, do those paragliding guys come under your umbrella?
No, although they look a little similar to the parachutes we use, the paragliders and the powered parachutes are really a very different sort of equipment. They wouldn't stand the rigors of deployment in free fall, and their performance envelope is way different from the parachutes we use. So not much relation at all.
That's a whole different culture then.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They're closer to the ultralights and the hang gliders, actually.
We talked about the benchmark for the equipment. Was there a point where the interest and the participation in the sport really took off?
There was. In the late 1980s, we saw a relative explosion in the number of people that came out to make a first jump. Two things were at work there. Tandem really became an accepted way to make a first jump by a lot of people. And in fact, today, it's the primary method by which people make their very first skydive.
Mm-hmm.
So tandem certainly brought a lot of newcomers into the sport. But back then as well, there were a couple of feature films that featured skydiving, Point Break being one of those, and that tended to attract people to trying the sport as well. So both of those in combination really produced a surge for us back in that time.
Well, that's pretty cool. It just the membership and the participation in the sport continues to jump. I think I see on some of your promotional material something like 2.5 million jumps were made last year.
Yes, that number is going back up. Thankfully, in 2007, we, for the first time in several years, our membership level, we had a decline, as most of aviation did right after 9/11 and with the brief recession that followed.
Sure.
But we've begun the climb back up. We had more new members join us last year than for the first time than in 5 years. So we think we're back on an upward trend, and we're excited about that.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's been a group effort between you guys and all the people that participate in the sport, wanting to establish and adhere to those strict safety standards. So congratulations on your safety record.
Well, thanks, Mike. It is a tight-knit group. We all look out for each other as well as enjoy the air with each other. But we appreciate that, and we'll look forward to getting you in the air with us soon.
All right. Sounds good. Now, your website?
USPA.org.
And folks interested in participating or just learning about the sport and maybe finding a club in their area, they can go to your website.
They can go to there and easily find a list of what we call drop zones throughout the U.S. that affiliate with us as group members. These 220 drop zones in the U.S. have pledged to abide by our basic safety requirements. So there should be some assurance there that they're getting quality instruction.
The Executive Director of the U.S. Parachute Association, Ed Scott, thanks for taking the time today.
Thanks for calling, Mike, anytime.
Comments on today's audiocast are welcome at audionews@avweb.com. Today's audiocast was brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening.